above and beyond having an amateur inserted into their tight-knit group. All of the Go teams were tight-knit. They had to be, to get the job done and survive. It was too damn bad she appealed to him, not so much in how she looked, though she was pretty enough, not flashy except for maybe her eyes, which were really blue, but with a yellow ring around the pupil. She had boobs and a butt, but not much of them. She had a lot of dark brown hair, shiny like a little kid's until she got coated in dust. What appealed to him most was that attitude and mouthiness, when common sense should have told her to button her lip. She hadn't, and he liked that. Didn't matter. She was off limits. He'd cut her no more slack than he did the others, and if she couldn't do the job, well then, that changed the rules of the game. He knew where she'd left her car because the bus always picked up the newbies at the same place. He gave a quick grin at how she'd fallen for that bullshit about putting a GPS on her car. Sooner or later, she'd find out he'd lied, and the team would get a kick out of listening to her bitch at him. He had a thick skin. He could take it. In fact, he looked forward to it. "Soak in a hot tub," was Levi's last bit of imparted wisdom, just before he'd let her out beside her Corolla. "And drink a lot of water." Gina had muttered a reply that was a sound, not a real word. She knew how to deal with sore muscles. Her only doubt was whether or not she'd be able to climb into the tub, and whether or not she'd drown once she was in there because she was too exhausted to sit upright. Her muscles had stiffened enough during the drive that she didn't get out of the truck, so much as she fell out and had to grab the door to keep from face-planting on the concrete parking lot. Without looking at him, she closed the door, firmly, but not indulging herself by slamming it, and shuffled around to the driver's side of the Corolla. Because she wasn't stupid, she hadn't taken a purse that day. Her remote was on a sturdy chain around her neck, and the remote itself tucked snugly into her sports bra. She clumsily fished it out and unlocked the door, opened it. Levi was already rolling, not waiting for her to get in the car and start it. She, on the other hand, waited until he was completely out of sight, before she clumsily dropped into the seat and used both hands to pick her legs up and swing them inside. Oh God, she ached. Even the bottoms of her feet hurt. By the time she dragged herself upstairs to her condo, cursing under her breath at every hellacious step, she was almost certain she was going to die. Her arms hadn't wanted to work enough to steer her Corolla, so she'd prayed her way through the DC traffic. The Corolla wasn't a rocket or a tank like all the men seemed to prefer, but damn it, she'd bought it new last year, and she was proud of it and didn't want to wreck it. She'd taken such good care of it that it even still had that sumptuous new car smell, though her sweat funk tonight might have killed it. She headed straight to the bathroom, knowing she was so filthy she couldn't sit down anywhere without ruining her furniture. All she wanted was to lie back in a tub of hot water, and as soon as she saw her reflection in the mirror, she knew that wasn't going to happen just yet. She was mostly monochromatic, caked from head to foot in red dust that had mixed with sweat and formed mud, which had then dried. In horror, she stared at her hair. Oh my God, my hair. She'd never get it clean. Pulling it back in a long ponytail hadn't helped. It had merely caused her hair to be glued to her head with mud. She turned on the shower, and while the water was getting hot, she painfully pulled off her filthy clothing. The worst was her socks, because the grit had worked its way through the fabric and rubbed her heels raw. Then the blisters had burst, sticking the fabric to her skin. Oh crap, her feet were going to be sore tomorrow. Get on the bandwagon, she thought grimly. Every inch of her body would likely be sore, hot tub and extra water notwithstanding. She shampooed twice, the water sluicing muddy red down her body. The water burned her raw heels. It was the most unpleasant shower she'd ever taken, which really griped her because normally she loved her showers. When the water ran clean, she towed the stopper closed, turned off the shower, and let the tub begin filling. She ran out of hot water before the tub was half full, courtesy of her extra-long two-shampoo shower. Swearing under her breath, she submerged as much of herself as possible in the too shallow water. Maybe she'd manage a better soak before she went to bed. Or maybe not. Through sheer stubbornness, she made herself keep going. Though she did pop a couple of ibuprofen to maybe help with the muscle soreness. She put antibiotic salve on her heels and covered them with extra large band-aids. She drank a lot of water, more than she wanted. And she nuked a frozen dinner, ate it unenthusiastically, then chased it with a candy bar. There. That was better. Just as she licked the last of the chocolate from her fingers, her phone rang. The special ringtone for her mother. Hi, Mom, what's up?
Just checking in, her mother said lightly.
Everything about her mother was light, from her slender build to her sunny hair to her voice. Gina's sisters, Ashley and Callie, had the same light musical tone to their voices. Gina, on the other hand, sounded like their father and had his dark hair instead of her mother's blonde. She was resigned to her fate now, but as a kid she'd been self-conscious and for a while tried not to talk much. That hadn't worked out well, because she wasn't great at keeping her mouth shut.
Anything new going on?
That was Mom speak for asking if she was dating anyone significant. Gina made a face. It wasn't as if she hadn't had steady boyfriends over the years, or that there weren't already a couple of grandkids to spoil rotten. Ashley, the oldest, had two, and Jordan, Gina's second oldest sibling, and his wife had one on the way. The only thing Gina could think was that her mom wanted her kids settled and producing in order of birth, which meant Gina was up next. There was something she needed to tell her mom, though, to head off future complications. I got transferred at work, she said. More pay. A lot more. And there'll be some travel involved.
Wow, that sounds great.
Mom sounded genuinely pleased.
More money and travel isn't something I'd turn down. You'll still be able to come home for holidays, though, won't you?
At least some of the time. There's no way to predict the travel schedule.
What will you be doing?
Computer stuff. None of what she was saying was a lie. Whenever anyone was hired, they were coached in how to tell the truth, which was much easier to remember, while making it sound innocuous. If any family member searched for info on the company name, they'd be reassured by the commonplace details they found, none of which included dispatched on a moment's notice to hotspots around the world, with the possibility of bullets and explosives.
Do you start right away?
No. There's training involved. Every aching muscle in her body attested to that. I'll be putting in 12-hour days for a while.
I hope you get overtime.
Nope, that wasn't going to happen. She caught up with the rest of the family. Dad was actually talking about the two of them taking a cruise, which Gina heartily endorsed. Taz, her youngest brother, who was in the army, was being transferred to Texas, while Callie, the baby, was both having a blast in college and had made the dean's list. By the time her mother wound down, Gina was yawning and trying to prop up her heavy eyelids. I gotta go, Mom, she muttered. I'm so sleepy I can barely stand up. And I have to get up at 5 a.m. She had to get through commiseration at her early wake-up time, and a promise to call soon and say, love y'all, twice, before she was clear to end the call. She limped to the bathroom, brushed her teeth, and started toward bed, before she remembered her hair was still wet. Swearing under her breath, she returned to the bathroom and leaned against the counter, with her eyes closed, while she blasted hot air at her head. She didn't care what it looked like tomorrow, because A, it would be in a ponytail, and B, it would likely be caked in mud again by the end of the day anyway. Perfect end to a shitty day, she said to the night, as she collapsed onto her bed. Even worse, tomorrow looked to be just as bad. She was right. After slapping the vicious alarm clock across the room because it wouldn't shut up, trying twice to get out of bed the normal way, sitting up and swinging her legs over, which was too agonizing. She gave up and rolled out of bed onto her knees. The alarm clock was still bleating like an angry goat,
Using the bed as support, she struggled to her feet and stiffly limped over to the clock. She eventually managed to bend over enough to pick it up, the effort accompanied by groans and curses. She'd quit today. There was no way she could do this. McNamara's idea was idiotic, that he could take a bunch of computer gaming couch potatoes and put them in the field. Why not just take some of the regular operatives and teach them how to operate the drone? Oh, yeah, right. They were too valuable as operators to essentially take them off the mission. Well, that was his problem, because she was out. O-U-T. Gone. Adios. And Levi, damn his evil eyes, would smirk as if he'd known from the beginning that she was a washout. Damn it, she couldn't quit. She'd never forgive herself if she let him smirk. If she tried and he smirked, that was on him. But if she gave up... No, she couldn't stand that. She'd have to stick with it, somehow, until she either broke a bone or they threw her off the program. She managed to get ready, eat, and drive herself to where they'd met the van the day before. If other arrangements had been made, she'd have been notified. Even though her team had cut her from the group yesterday, she was still part of it. Nevertheless, when she parked, she was glad to see some of the others already there. And best of all, they weren't moving any more easily than she was. Everyone was limping around hollow-eyed, as if no amount of sleep had been able to offset the unaccustomed physical exertion of the day before. Yeah, no argument there. The guys greeted her, but otherwise were a bit standoffish. She was annoyed, but understood. By signaling her out yesterday, her team had sent a signal that her treatment would be different from what the others received. The others didn't know that meant she'd had a more difficult time than they had. They just thought of different as special. She could do with a little less specialness. The van rattled up, belching smoke, and they all stiffly climbed inside. Gina settled into a seat by herself, not surprised that the guys seemed to be avoiding her. Donnelly climbed in, glanced around, then sat down beside her. A bit surprised after what had happened yesterday, she looked at him with lifted brows. He shifted uncomfortably, his sunburned cheeks turning a deeper shade of raw.
I'm sorry. About bumping you during the run.
Once he got those words out without choking, he took a deep breath and continued.
It was just, I don't know, all of a sudden it felt like a race and...
Enough said. Donnelly'd always seemed nice enough, so she wasn't going to hold that one slip against him.
Yeah, I know. I have brothers, she explained. One older and one younger. It's okay. I got you back, so we're even.
He shifted, winced, leaned down to rub his left shin.
Yeah. Anyway, the big dogs pulled you out of the group. Special training?
She snorted.
You might say that.
After telling me they'd leave me behind if I couldn't keep up. And that every other person on the team was way more valuable than I am. They tried to kill me and make it look like a training accident. None of them were thrilled at getting stuck with the only woman.
Donnelly frowned at her.
Don't they know you had the high score?
A high score on a computer game doesn't mean much to them.
But that's the whole point of us being here.
That's the way she saw it, but the big dog saw it differently. They're all worried untrained, unmotivated amateurs might get them killed.
Hey, I'm motivated. I'm motivated to keep my job. Paychecks are nice things to have.
He shifted again, winced again.
But I have my doubts about living through this. My feet have blisters on their blisters.
We need boots, she said, to keep the grit out. That's what the guys on the team were wearing. Baxter, too. She added thoughtfully.
I couldn't get boots on my feet right now, he said glumly. What doesn't kill us makes us stronger, right? We should be frickin' superheroes before this is finished.
After bouncing around on broken shocks, watching the pavement through the hole in the floorboard, and getting a headache from breathing exhaust, they arrived back at the training ground. Baxter met the van, grinned as he watched them all limp and stumble out of the vehicle.
What's the matter? Everyone a little sore?
Glowering silence met the jibe, and his grin grew until his eyes were wrinkled slits.
That's what I thought. I'm gonna take it easy on you today, because you didn't know you were going to get thrown into the shark pool, so to speak, and had no opportunity to get in better shape before training started.
Gina looked around, searching for her personal tormentors. She didn't recognize anyone, though again there seemed to be dozens of men moving around the area, heavily armed, blowing stuff up, kicking down doors. Baxter noticed her.
You're back with us, Modell. Ace's team got called out early this morning. He said to tell you to keep your ass in gear and be in better shape when they get back.
Peachy, she muttered. When are they due back? Tonight? Baxter shrugged.
Could be a few days. Could be a few weeks. You never know. Some situations blow up. Nothing you can do.
Gina blew out a breath, caught in a jumble of relief and annoyance. She'd geared herself up to deal with Levi, not just with him, but all the others, too. She had a lot of animosity and grievance stored inside her, looking for a target, and now she had to bank it down. On the other hand, she wasn't going to die today. Thank you, God, she thought fervently. She'd take whatever reprieve she could get. And she'd show him. She'd, by God, show him. 4. The team's absence at least gave her time to get over her extreme muscle soreness. She and the others moved painfully through Baxter's routine, which he thankfully limited to stretching and some calisthenics that still hurt like heck. Then they were taken to a classroom where they began studying the leading-edge drone they'd be piloting in the field, and probably in surveillance situations, though that wasn't spelled out. Gina was totally on board with sitting in a cool, dim room and moving not much more than her fingers.
The drone simulation program was awesome. The graphics were so lifelike, there wasn't much difference between the program and reality.
The drone's capabilities were way beyond what she'd thought drones could do. Not that she'd ever paid a lot of attention to drones before, other than knowing some of them were causing problems at airports. Now that she was seeing firsthand what their capabilities were, wow, this was serious stuff. Donnelly took the station beside hers, but there was very little conversation between them. Mostly they concentrated on their own screens. She was able to lose herself in the screen the way she did when she was gaming, grunting occasionally, muttering under her breath. This wasn't running up a score or winning points or gaining magic weapons. This was learning how the drone responded, how to zoom the camera in on tiny details, how to decipher what she was seeing. What amazed her the most was that she knew this was just the tip of the drone's capabilities, that she was taking baby steps. Each new stage of training would reveal more. She'd have loved this part of it even if she hadn't been able to sit down, rest her sore muscles, and not sweat herself half to death. For the first time, she felt a frisson of enthusiasm for this new assignment. Yeah, it was geeky of her, but she was okay with that. The following days settled into a pattern. On the third day, Baxter ran them through hard physical conditioning again. Then on the fourth day, their tired muscles were allowed some time to recover, and they spent more time on the drone program. The fifth day, they had half a day off, and Gina forced herself to drive to the nearest mall and buy a couple of pairs of boots that were suitable for running, plus a multitude of thick socks. The boots that looked like the guy's boots were, unfortunately, made for men, and slipped up and down on her heels. But she figured she could glue extra padding to the insides. If that didn't work, she'd see what she could order online, maybe from Army Surplus. But she needed something other than her sneakers now.
By the tenth day, she was doing some extra running on her own time, and Levi's team still hadn't returned.
She was fine with that. She could tell that her stamina had improved, and she'd dropped a few pounds. But she wanted to be in much better shape before she was subjected to the team's training again. The boots worked okay, after she beat them with a hammer to soften them up, and added insoles to make them fit better. They were certainly more protective of her feet and supportive of her ankles. After she'd worn them a couple of days, the other guys began showing up in boots too. They were all learning. Donnelly asked her out. Then they mutually decided they were too tired, and maybe they'd have the energy for an actual date in another month or so. Then again, maybe not. Gina didn't feel any real attraction to Donnelly, though she liked him okay, and she didn't think he was wildly attracted to her either. Besides, training took all her time and attention. 17 days after they left, Levi and the guys were back. The first hint Gina had was when she got out of the van. For reasons known only to the PTB, the trainees still weren't allowed to drive their own vehicles to the training site, unless it was to prevent escape. And spotted a big black pickup truck parked in the lot. The bottom dropped out of her stomach, and every muscle in her body clenched. Oh, shit. Her vacation was over. She thought about getting back in the van and hiding. She even half-turned, but the driver had already put the van in gear and was pulling away. He never lingered, probably to prevent anyone from using the van as a getaway vehicle.
Babe.
Levi. She didn't jump, but she felt as if every nerve in her body was electrified and made her hair stand on end. How did he do that? Where had he come from? She could have sworn he wasn't anywhere nearby. Then, abruptly, he was right behind her. Maybe facing a cobra would be worse than turning to meet those merciless dark eyes, but she doubted it. Still, she turned and kept her expression blank. Yeah? She said, as if he were someone unknown interrupting her day. His gaze raked down her and lingered momentarily on her boots.
The guys are this way. Let's get started.
Fine, no small talk. She was good with that. She didn't try to keep up with his long-legged stride, first because she wasn't in any hurry to get started, and second because she'd have to trot to keep up, and damn if she would. The others were jeering each other over a wall. The wall. All the trainees had seen team members scaling the wall as if they were monkeys, climbing the dangling ropes with legs and arms working in perfect coordination, kind of pinching the rope between their feet. Fearing the wall was in her future, Gina had begun doing some push-ups and chin-ups at home. Okay, she was up to 10 push-ups and 2 chin-ups. But both were now plural, so she'd been happy with her progress. At least until this exact sickening moment, when she realized she and the wall were going to meet much sooner than she'd hoped. Snake waggled his eyebrows when he saw her.
Babe, you have a little muscle definition in those arms now. Good for you!
Muscle definition? Her? Doubtfully, she looked at her arms. All she could tell was that she had a tan, though she was diligent about putting on sunscreen every day. And yeah, her sweatpants were a little loose now, but not much, because she was eating like a horse. As far as the guys were concerned, she could definitely tell that they looked leaner and more tan. Wherever they'd been and whatever they'd been doing, they'd been in the sun and hadn't had enough food to maintain their weight. But they didn't look tired or lethargic. Instead, they were like tightly wound springs, energy contained but ready to explode if needed. Their reflexes on hair triggers, their alertness in the hyperzone. Gina had the feeling she shouldn't make any sudden moves, despite the joviality with which they tackled the wall. Levi indicated the wall with a jerk of his head.
Let's see how far you are from getting up to speed.
Damn it, she'd known he was going to throw her at the wall. A long way, she assured him. Miles and miles. I'm nowhere near any speed. He just gave her that implacable look, and she resigned herself to the inevitable. Grumbling under her breath, she hoped far enough under that he couldn't understand her, because she was calling him some really bad names. She wiped her palms on the seat of her sweatpants and approached one of the dangling ropes. The guys gathered in a loose circle, grinning, ready for some entertainment at her expense. Most of them grinned anyway. Voodoo scowled. And Levi looked as if his face would crack if he smiled. Screw them, anyway. She wasn't going to impress them, not when she could do a whole 2 chin-ups. The best she could do was get this out of the way, so she could suffer through something else. Glaring at the rope as if it were her mortal enemy, she picked out the spot as high as she thought she could jump, which wasn't as high as Levi was tall. But what the hell? She had to start somewhere. She jumped. And missed. The damn rope was like a snake, coiling away from the impact of her hand, and she wasn't fast enough to catch it. The guys were laughing as she got to her feet and brushed the dust off her ass. She ignored them and studied the demon rope. Okay, she'd done that wrong. She couldn't jump at the rope, she knew that. But she'd screwed up and jumped anyway. On the second try, she gripped the rope in her left hand, jumped, and caught the rope with her right hand while she groped with her feet, trying to imitate the pinching motion she'd seen the guys do. She couldn't catch the wiggling length. Her arms gave out, and she dropped to the ground. Thank God she didn't have far to fall, though she supposed she should feel humiliated that she wasn't quite a foot off the ground. She didn't, though, because what fool had thought being good at a computer game would equip her for climbing ropes? Her boss, that's what fool.
You have the right idea, Levi said. But you're complicating things. You're right-handed, so let the rope lie against the outside of your right leg. Then catch it with your feet as if you're stepping in a loop.
That kind of made sense. Kind of. And at least he was making the effort to be helpful, instead of just letting her lurch from one screw-up to the next. Boom moved to stand beside her. Sweat gleamed on his dark skin and stained the once white bandana he'd tied around his head as a sweatband.
Like this, he said, reaching up to grip the rope.
He hauled himself off the ground, showing her how to hook the rope using his offside foot, pulling it up under the instep of his rope side foot, and pinching the rope between them.
The loop of rope, not your arms, will support your weight, Levi said. Think of the loop as a step you're using to go higher. You still need arm strength to reach higher, Snake added. But your legs will be holding your weight, so this technique isn't as tiring as others.
She growled a little in her throat, annoyed they hadn't shown her this before she'd busted her ass. But she approached the rope with a determined air. She worked through the motions in her mind. Then when she had it set what she needed to do, she gripped, hauled, hooked, pinched, and stood in the loop of rope. She was only inches off the ground, but she hadn't fallen again, so that was a big plus.
Up, Levi said.
Up. Okay. She reached higher, pulled herself up, caught and looped the rope with her feet, and damn if she wasn't a foot off the ground. She did it again, her arms beginning to tremble a little, and this time she reached 2 feet off the ground. Again. 3 feet now. And she repeated the process twice more and found herself a whole 6 feet off the ground, because somehow she'd gained more each of the last two times,
even though the rope had wiggled around like a snake, and she'd had trouble snagging it.
She didn't think her arms would hold out for another go, though. She was breathing hard and sweating like a pig. Why didn't they want her to run? She could run for a much longer distance than she'd been able to 17 days ago. Running wasn't so bad. At least not as bad as rope climbing.
One more, Levi said,
which she took to mean he'd noticed her arms shaking, and while he didn't want her there, neither did he want her to fall and break her neck on his watch. Her feet were almost level with his head, and she briefly fantasized about accidentally kicking her in the teeth, except he was smart enough to stand out of reach. Besides, if she freed either foot, she'd have no anchor and she'd fall. Falling from 6 feet was way different from falling at ground level. She stood in the loop for a few more seconds, letting her arms rest, then hauled herself up. Wow. 7 feet. She was impressed with herself, though the sweat running down her face was stinging her eyes. She scrubbed her face against her shoulder and blew out a breath. How in heck was she supposed to get down? The rough rope was already burning her hands, and she didn't want to slide down it. But she had to get down soon, because her arm muscles were quivering and could give out at any minute.
Guys?
She began in alarm, about to ask them how she was supposed to dismount, or whatever one did to get off a rope, when her sweaty hands began to slip. She yelped, grabbed, and somehow lost the rope snagged between her feet. She had a split second to make a decision. Burn her hands or let go and maybe break a leg. and she was about to opt for the burned hands when her sweaty palms decided for her, and down she went, for about a foot, when Levi grabbed her with one steely arm wrapped around her thighs and hauled her away from the rope. For 1 second, just one, he held her tight against him. Her senses spun. The bottom dropped out of her stomach again, and every nerve went on danger alert. His body heat seared right through her, all the way to the bone. Her entire body went rigid, as if she'd been electrified, and he let her drop with a thud, making no move to steady her. Once more, she landed flat on her ass, thank God. Nothing was a better distraction than hard contact with Mother Earth. 7 men stared silently down at her. "My hands are sweaty," she muttered an excuse, looking up at them. They surrounded her like vultures, ready to pick her bones. Voodoo wore an expression of intense disgust. He put his hands on his hips.
"This is a stupid idea," he spat. "Shit like this can get us killed. She's worthless."
Gina's lip curled as she focused on the asshole, grateful he'd given her a target that took her attention away from Levi. She was a lot of things, but worthless wasn't one of them, and neither was timidity. She shot a rigid forefinger at him, glaring at him over it as if she was aiming a weapon.
"Excuse the hell out of me for not being as good as you after just 17 days of PT. You know what? You can kiss my ass. And you better watch your manners, because if you make my inner redneck come out, you'll regret it."
Jelly reached down and offered his hand to pull her up. She clasped his forearm, and he lifted her with an effortless jerk that stood her on her feet. She didn't take her eyes off Voodoo the whole time. Being sandwiched between an older brother and a younger one had taught her to take up for herself, because they'd seen her as fair game. She was neither the big sister who had ruled the roost, or the baby sister who was, well, the baby. And she'd had to let them know she wouldn't take the crap.
"What does an inner redneck do?"
Jelly asked, laughter quivering in his tone.
"It starts with a cutting," Gina replied, without a hint of humor, "and escalates to a house burning. We don't want to go there." "Voodoo's from the South, too."
"No, he's from Louisiana," Boom interjected. "That's different."
"Both of you cut this shit out," Levi ordered in a curt tone.
"We don't have time for it. If you want to fight, do it on your own time. But if either of you gets hurt, I'll kick the other one's ass. Got that?"
"Got it,"
Voodoo said, because Levi's tone had said he damn well meant every word he said. Besides, they'd worked together a long time.
"Got it," Gina muttered.
She hadn't worked with any of them long enough to either trust or like them, but she tagged along when they all headed off in another direction, as if they'd been doing something else and had just been fooling around with that damn wall, waiting for her to get there so they could have a laugh and see her get dirt all over her. Again. Mission accomplished. "I hate them. I hate them all." That became her mantra over the following weeks. She was so tired the days bled together, until sometimes she didn't know which day of the week it was. Which was why she showed up to wait for the van on a Sunday, only to finally look at her phone and realize why she was the only one at the parking lot. She drove back home and fell face down on the bed, slept until noon, and awakened only when her mom called to scold her for not calling.
"Mom," she said groggily, "I posted a private message on your Facebook page, letting you know I was okay."
"That was 2 weeks ago, and I posted one to you 3 days ago that you haven't replied to yet."
"Oh," she yawned, tried to sit up, and gave up the effort to flop back down.
"Sorry, I've been too busy to even look at Facebook. I got up this morning, went to work, and when no one else showed up, I finally realized it's Sunday. I came home and went back to sleep."
Instantly, her mom morphed into mother mode.
"What on earth kind of hours are you working? It isn't healthy to go without sleep. Are you eating?"
"I'm eating," she replied, though truthfully she couldn't remember what she'd had for supper last night, or if she'd had supper. She must have,
She did so many routine things while on autopilot these days that she had to take it on faith that she was eating regular meals. She definitely remembered eating breakfast, though.
What are you eating?
This morning for breakfast, I nuked 4 miniature spinach and bacon quiches and ate them while I was driving to work. I'm ticked off I didn't realize it was Sunday, and I could have sat at the table and eaten like a human being with a fork. I'm ticked off I didn't realize it was Sunday and could have slept through breakfast. She was more pissed about the sleep than she was the food. Food wasn't in short supply.
You need a vacation.
That was the truth, but can't happen until training is finished.
We haven't seen you in over 9 months. How long is this training supposed to last?
9 months? That couldn't be right. She'd gone home for Christmas, and now it was... She looked at her phone. September. Damn, how had that happened? She'd started training in June, and now 3 months were down the drain. It's a 6-month training program, she said. But it can be extended if some new technology or programs come on board. All that was true, except for the 6-month part. She lived for the time she spent on the computer learning more about the drone and honing her skills. Not least because that got her out of the physical torture crap they called PT. The truth was, though, the training period would last as long as it needed to last, because no way would any of them be allowed out in the field until they were ready.
Can't you get some vacation time when Jordan and Emily's baby is due? We all want you here.
It's doubtful, Gina replied, doing some quick math in her head. It's due in November, right? I'll still be in training.
But you're due some vacation time. Surely you can pick up with the training when you get back.
That was her mom. Family came first, regardless, and as persistent as a snapping turtle. Surely I can lose my job, Gina said dryly. There's no vacation time during training, short of a death in the family, and let's not go there.
That isn't right.
I knew the terms when I signed up. Do you want me to be a quitter? The whole family knew that calling her a quitter was the one thing that would make her dig her heels in deeper.
No, but I do want to see you more than once a year. We might plan a trip up there, since you can't come down here.
That'd be great, Gina said, though she fought back a surge of panic at the idea of her parents seeing the shape she was in when she dragged herself home at the end of the day. There was no way she could convince them that the sweat, dirt, and bruises were the result of any computer training. Just remember, I get only one day off, and I'm in training at least 10 hours a day. You and Daddy would be on your own most of the time, though that would be a great time to explore all the museums and historical buildings. She'd love to see them, no matter what shape she was in. She'd have to ask some of the married team members how they handled family stuff. There couldn't be complete secrecy. That would never work, especially when the teams were out in the field for days, weeks at a time.
I don't know,
her mom said doubtfully, which likely meant they weren't going to show up on her doorstep anytime soon.
Are you sure you'll be happy with a job that takes so much of your time?
It's really interesting, Gina said. It's intense, but I'm learning a lot. And even if I don't stay in this job for longer than a few years, the training will stay with me forever. All that was true, and getting more true by the day. She loved working with the drone, or at least the drone simulator.
None of them had seen the real deal yet, but maybe soon.
She couldn't wait. Though she'd have sworn on the first day that being assigned to the GO teams was the last thing she wanted, and though she still hated every minute of the physical conditioning, she was beginning to feel at home with it all.
Damn it.
5. They took a water break. Chugging water was so important that they stopped even more than she would have thought necessary. Gina dropped the grass, twisted the top off her water bottle, and chugged half of it at one go. Levi sat down beside her and said, "Hold out your hand." She paused with the water bottle still to her mouth and gave him a narrow, sideways look. "Why?" she asked suspiciously, scowling at him. She'd been through this routine before. Two brothers had taught her to never trust what they would put in her hand would be anything she wanted. It had almost always been something gross, like a dead mouse or fake poop. One memorable time, the poop hadn't been fake. Jordan and Taz had both gotten trouble for that. Not only were those memories still sharp, but she figured any time Levi gave her his direct attention, something was up, and she never liked it. His gaze was cold and exasperated.
Are you going to question every order you're given?
His tone was a warning, loud and clear. She had to trust them, and if she didn't, that was a big hurdle. Stopping to second-guess team members who actually knew what they were doing could get someone killed. Are you going to put a rat in my hand? Around her, she heard the other guy start snickering, but she didn't look at them.
Never take your gaze off the enemy. And maybe Levi wasn't exactly her enemy, but neither was he her friend.
The philosophy held good for her. Levi didn't think it was funny.
I don't waste my time with juvenile stunts.
Or anything resembling a sense of humor, either. Warily, ready to jerk her hand back at the least touch of anything furry or icky, she held out her hand, palm down. He made a frustrated growling sound deep in his throat, seized her hand and turned it over. She had a sharp impression of heat, strength, a calloused palm. Then he slapped something metal into her palm and dropped her hand. She blew out a mental sigh of relief. Thank God it was metal, though she supposed he wasn't about to waste time with a dead mouse. She looked down. The thing was about the size of an M67 grenade, and she was proud of herself for knowing that. She was also astonished at herself for the same reason. What she was holding was army green and had a clamshell covering. It was a compass. It's a compass, she said, then curled her lip at him. What do I want with a compass? I have my phone. My phone even has someone inside it who talks to me and tells me when and in what direction to turn. I don't need no stinking compass. Computers. She was comfortable with computers. Compasses were kind of rudimentary. Never mind that Columbus and thousands of others had sailed the ocean blue with nothing but a compass, and an astrolabe or two. Hey, she could put that to music. Columbus sailed the ocean blue with nothing but a compass and an astrolabe or two. She even sang it for them, though the tune wasn't noteworthy. The other guys were outright laughing now. But Levi's expression said he didn't find either her song or her reasoning very funny.
You need a stinking compass when there's no cell service, or when you have to take the battery out of your phone so you can't be tracked.
What will I be doing that I need a compass? That was the main point, and one that alarmed her.
Never can tell, Trapper put in.
We never know where we might get sent. We all have one.
Okay, there was that. It just felt discordant. What she would be doing with the team was high-tech, so suddenly being forced to rely on a compass to get her to wherever she was supposed to be likely meant that everything had gone to hell in a handbasket, a situation she hoped never happened. She wasn't equipped to handle hell, whether it was in a handbasket or not.
You're going to learn how to navigate by a compass, Levi said, telling her what she'd already surmised. Then I go into the woods, call in the coordinates, and you have to find me.
She looked up at him, resigned. Oh, frickin' joy, she muttered. If I don't find you, do you stay lost?
No, but you crap out of training.
Well, losing him had been worth a shot. She hadn't used a compass in years. She opened the case and examined the one in her hand. This was a serious piece of work, not something bought from Walmart. It had 360 degrees on the rotating bezel, a declination arrow, meridian lines, the whole deal.
Have you ever used one before?
Levi asked, his tone resigned, as if he hoped for nothing more than total ignorance. Of course. I was in Girl Scouts. That was a lie. But her brothers had both been in Boy Scouts, and they'd thought it was great fun to take her into the woods, give her the coordinates for home, then run off and leave her. At least they'd taken the time to teach her some about how to navigate by compass. Though what had really saved her bacon a time or two was her own sense of direction, which was pretty damn great. Another of those cool looks from him.
There wasn't anything about Girl Scouts in your file.
Why would there be? I listed all my technical training, not my childhood extracurriculars.
I wasn't talking about your application.
Oh. He meant file. Duh. Of course, all the trainees had been investigated. She should have thought of that. Rather than trying to continue bullshitting her way through the conversation, she shrugged and got down to business. You have a map? He pulled one out of the cargo pocket on his right thigh and handed it over. She examined the map. It was a detailed topographical map, with all the necessary declination and longitude-latitude markings. Give me a refresher, she said. It's been a while. He got on one knee, to her right, and she did likewise, resting the map on her right thigh. A good compass did more than just point toward magnetic north, which wasn't true north anyway. With the compass and a good map, she should be able to find her way to any particular point. Levi gave her terse directions, leaning closer and watching sharply as she followed his instructions. He was so close that her shoulder was pressed against his ribcage. She could actually feel his heartbeat, strong and slow and steady. Just like that, an avalanche of information overwhelmed her senses. The smell of sweat and dirt and man, the musk of his skin mixed with gunpowder from the live fire exercises they'd run through earlier, the heat of his body, scalding her skin more than the prickling heat of the sun. It was somehow too much, too intimate, that she could feel his heartbeat. For a second she felt dizzy from the overload, then she took a deep, quiet breath and pushed all that away so she could concentrate on what he was saying. He had her plot a course to something she could actually see, which was the main training course, a good half-mile away. Some of what her brothers had taught her came back, and that was an easy test anyway, so she nailed it.
Maybe you were a Girl Scout, he commented,
narrowing his eyes as he glanced up at the sun. I lied, she said nonchalantly. My brothers were in the Scouts, and they taught me. He rubbed between his eyebrows, pinched the bridge of his nose.
Plot another one.
He could have skimped on the instruction, made it more difficult for her to successfully do the task, but he didn't. Gina was still sharply aware of how much he didn't want her there. He made that plain every day, in 100 ways, both large and small. But she couldn't accuse him of undercutting her with inadequate training. Taking it easy on her would have been the fastest, easiest way to get rid of her. But he hadn't taken it. She had to admit to a grudging respect for the strength of character he revealed every time he barked at her to go faster, run longer, to dig for resolve and second wind. If she crapped out of training, as he put it, the fault wouldn't be his. While she was working on a new course, he and Boom had a quiet side conference, maybe deciding whether or not they'd bother looking for her if she got lost. He checked her results and nodded.
Okay, let's do this. You have a time limit, he added, glancing at the watch on his left wrist. You have to find me in time for us to walk out before dark. If you're slow, we'll keep repeating the exercise until you get it right.
Tonight? She asked in horror, because the afternoon was already half over, and she didn't like the idea of running around in the woods at night. That was a good way to break something, not to mention woods equaled snakes. And in the darkness she might step on one. No way would she ever admit it to them. But she was also a little night-wary. She could sleep in the dark now, but growing up she'd needed a nightlight, and she'd endured endless teasing about being a scaredy cat. She knew she'd have a flashlight, but still. He seemed to be reaching for patience.
No, not at night.
Then he looked thoughtful.
Not now, anyway. We might do a night exercise later.
She should have kept her mouth shut. One of the instructors drove up in a utility vehicle. Levi swung aboard, and she turned her back on him as they left. Is there more water? She asked the guys as she went over to the big cooler that was usually kept packed with water and ice. Normally the cooler was replenished about every hour. But according to the schedule, they should be almost finished with all the PT. So maybe it hadn't been. There was still plenty, though. She drank another bottle while she was standing there, because the heat and humidity sucked the moisture right out of her. Some days she felt as if she couldn't physically drink enough water. She began scrounging around for something to put the extra bottles in, and Snake tossed her a small canvas bag that smelled like 6 months' sweat and man funk. It also looked as if it had never been washed. She didn't care. She'd gotten used to grungy men. While she was waiting for Levi's location coordinates to come in, she sat with the compass and map and worked out some more plot courses. Voodoo said snidely,
"Don't forget to take a flashlight."
Meaning he didn't think she could locate Levi and get back before dark. She shrugged and said, "Good idea." If he thought he could get under her skin, he'd have to do better than that. As the minutes ticked past, she got more and more worried. The farther away Levi chose to be, obviously the longer it would take her to get there, and for them to get out. And sunset was getting closer and closer. He wouldn't sabotage her like that, would he? As soon as she had the thought, both her phone and Boom's dinged with an incoming text. Levi's coordinates. Her instinct was to hurry, but she pushed that away. Being accurate was the most important right now. She took the topo map and found his location, then double-checked. She studied the map, then used the compass to plot two courses. He was diabolical. The most direct course, according to the topo map, was also the most difficult, with some steep hills to climb, dense vegetation, and a creek that might or might not be easy to ford. The longer route would bypass most of those difficulties, though that damn creek managed to get in her way. She didn't ask Boom or Snake, the two friendliest guys, to check her work. She either did this on her own, or she failed. She folded the map and stuck it in the zippered pocket on her thigh, slung the bag strap around her neck on the diagonal, and set off at a brisk lope. Running flat out in this heat would exhaust her fast, but she didn't have the luxury of taking her time either. Her feet pounded the pavement as she cut across the parking lot. Cutting through the training area would have been faster, but there were people on site executing training exercises. Suddenly darting through the middle of one of them would be a good way to get several people hurt. Leaving the training area behind, she cut through a small field that was knee-high in weeds, then stopped to take her bearings again. She hadn't gone far enough west to skirt the roughest terrain. She set off again. At the edge of another field, the weeds disguised a drainage ditch that she didn't see in time to jump it, and instead plunged in with both feet. She wasn't hurt, but the green, slightly slimy water in the ditch came almost to her knees and immediately gushed inside her boots, soaking her socks. "Damn it," she groused as she grabbed a clump of greenery to haul herself out of the ditch. A briar jabbed into her palm. "Son of a bitch!" In too much of a hurry to stop and hack the offending, bristly plant to pieces, she climbed out, sat on the ground to pull off her boots and empty them of water, then started out again. A quarter of a mile later, she stopped for another compass reading. This time she'd gone far enough west. Now she needed to head due north. According to the coordinates he'd sent, Levi should be about 5 miles straight ahead. 5 miles. She could do that. Even though the terrain of the course she'd chosen wasn't as challenging as the most direct route, but neither was it flat. 2 months ago, she couldn't have done 5 miles, at least not at the speed she needed. But that was 2 months ago. This was now. And she was all, "I'm woman, hear me roar." Uh-huh. As if she'd have enough breath for roaring. Then she hit the woods. She stopped long enough to cut herself a nice, sturdy, 5-foot-long stick. Both for extra support on the uneven ground, and for a means of dealing with snakes. She drank some water, because sweat was pouring off her in rivers in the steamy humidity, and set out again. Gnats swarmed around her head. One actually got in her nose, and she had no choice but to stop, because she was jumping up and down and cussing and trying to blow her nose to get the damn thing out. When she finally had her nose gnat-free, she could only thank her patron saint, She assumed everyone had one, whether they were Catholic or not. That she was alone and none of the guys saw that particular spastic fit, she'd never have lived it down. They might have changed her nickname from Babe to Nat in honor of the occasion. As bad as Babe was, she preferred it over Nat. With an estimated 3 miles to go, she realized she had a problem. Her wet socks and wet boots were doing their best to take the skin off her feet. She could feel the blisters forming on her heels and across her toes as her feet moved up and down inside the boots. And these were her good boots, the ones that fit the best. Damn it, damn it, damn it. She had run miles in these boots, probably 100 miles, and this was the first time they'd given her any trouble. Of course, this was the first time both the boots and her socks were waterlogged. There was no telling what kind of germs were in that drainage ditch either. A quick personal inventory told her that she hadn't automatically stuck any adhesive bandages in her cargo pockets either. Not that they'd stay stuck, considering how wet her feet were. There was nothing to do but keep on. She had to keep pounding, pushing through brush, climbing over rocks and fallen trees. Turning back would mean she failed to accomplish the mission, and she couldn't trust that she'd get a second chance. She had to find Levi. Then, and only then, could she worry about her feet. But damn, every blister was a hot and growing point of pain. Clenching her toes to move the pressure around didn't help. She thought of stopping just long enough to take her wet socks off, but that would make her feet move around inside the boots even more. All she'd get for that was new blisters. She stopped to take another compass reading and drink more water. That was 2 bottles down and 2 left. Sweat drenched her. Her olive drab tee was as wet as her pants and boots. Her hair clung to the back of her neck and her eyes stung from the salt in her sweat. Being tough was not for the fastidious, but this was one of those times when she'd rather be fastidious than tough. By 4, she was using the stick to help bear her weight.
A check of her phone told her she'd been fairly fast, even hampered as she was with painful blisters. She'd get to Levi in time for them to walk out before dark.
She wasn't certain how she'd manage the 5 miles back to the training site, but she'd worry about that after she found him. The last 3/4 of a mile were the hardest. The terrain roughened from just forest to uphill forest, with boulders and rocks and fallen trees, and thicker underbrush where the fallen trees had let in more sunlight. Climbing up a slick rock face wasn't fun, because if a snake was going to sun itself anywhere, on a rock would be the place. Once her boot slipped on some moss, and for a moment she thought she was going to slide all the way down, but she managed to catch herself within a foot or so. She skinned one elbow and her hand, but that was it. Once on the other side of the rock, the terrain smoothed out again. She checked her bearings with the compass, adjusted a little to the left, and 5 minutes later walked up on Levi, sitting on another large rock, a bottle of water dangling from one hand, and a book in the other. He wasn't reading, though. He was watching her approach. "What you reading?" she asked casually, as if she hadn't almost killed herself getting to him in time. Instead of answering, he said,
"You're limping."
His tone was curt. Why did every comment he made feel like a criticism? She tried not to bristle.
"Blisters. My feet got wet. Come on, let's go. We have to get out of here by dark. Your rules."
Instead of getting up, he dug his phone out of his pocket and sent a text. Gina stared at him, feeling a flash of anger. Now he was going to sabotage her by deliberately delaying.
"If you make us late, that's on you," she said sharply. "Or I'll leave and you can stay here. I've found you. If I make it back before dark, I've completed my mission, whether you're with me or not."
She gripped her stick and turned around, not willing to waste another minute.
"Sit down and pull your boots off," he ordered just as sharply. "I texted Boom to come pick us up."
"What? No!" She gripped the stick tighter, ready to wail him with it. "I found you. I can make it back before dark. I won't let you knock me out of this by—"
"Stow it," he interrupted, dark eyes cutting through her. "I didn't say we had to walk out. I said you had to find me fast enough that we'd have enough time to walk out. You did, I already had it set up with Boom to pick us up, though he can't get all the way here. We'll have to hike part of the way, so your feet need taken care of. Now pull off your damn boots and socks.